Welcome to the Fast Cars, Fast Girls podcast with Abby and Molly. Here with us this week, we've got Brian Runnels. You may know him as the Indy 500 Pirate.
Yeah, on Twitter, yes.
You might also know him by his infamous shirts that say, fuck you, we're from Indianapolis.
Yep.
Which we love.
And it turns out before we met Brian, we had actually sneakily taken pictures of him without his knowledge or consent.
Really?
For the last couple of years when we're at the track and have seen him. We've seen your shirts and have taken pictures. And then we met you this year. You were wearing that shirt. And
right.
Yeah, it just cracked us up. I'm like, we know who this guy is.
Right.
Finally.
Yeah,
we've seen this guy.
That's my symbol when we go to Daytona for the 24-hour race.
Well, we're very excited. We just got our tickets and our hats in the mail today.
Good deal.
Yeah.
All right, so what'd you get? Just 2-day passes then?
No, we did the 4-day.
You got 4-day?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And you got hats with it?
Yeah, they had a special where it was only like $4 more.
Oh,
it was
$100
for the 4-day pass, and it was $104 to get the 4-day pass and an event hat.
Wow. I wish I'd known that. I mean, we have to buy a package.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
To get everything. And you have to buy at least 2 admission tickets. But the camping pass is nothing. It's like $40.
That's what we... Yeah.
But see, you can't get... Did you get a camping pass?
Yes, we grabbed a camping pass.
We did just in case. Because we know you guys said you had room, but we figured just in case.
So yeah. Or you can't... Did you get a pass inside?
No. Those are sold out.
Yeah. So they'll sell out immediately. They're, and I don't know how Doug even got us in on that. Because he went 1 year and...
He's very personable.
He bought a pass for the outside campground.
Mm-hmm.
And then him and Gabe went inside and started walking around and found a pass to get inside.
Mm.
And they came inside and, well, lo and behold, next year they asked Doug, they sent him a letter and said, do you want to renew? He's like, sure. And when he renewed, it was an inside camp pass.
Hey,
okay.
Let it happen.
So maybe that will happen for you two next year.
That'd be awesome. That'd
I mean, you're going to enjoy it.
It is a
freaking blast.
Now, so, all right. Well, Brian, tell us. So you've been working at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway for how many years?
This makes 36 this year.
36 years. So how'd you get started?
I had a bunch of friends that worked there, and I grew up in Greencastle, which is just west of Indianapolis, the Speedway area.
Home of DePaul University.
There you go, exactly. We must have had this conversation before, I think.
No, I have a friend who's from Greencastle.
Okay, all right. But a few of my friends worked at the Speedway.
Okay.
And we would always have a party on Memorial Day weekend every year on the night before the 500.
Saturday
and
night party?
Few of us were underage.
It happens.
And then
it's happened on this podcast.
Always at like midnight, a group of these guys would say, man, we got to go. Like, where are you going? Well, we work at the Speedway. We got to go to work. And at that time, you had to, I mean, 16th Street would back up. There used to be a parking lot at the end of...
Georgetown?
No. It was the Goodyear facility for years. That's right now. It's the Lockett facility for IPD. That's the barns that are over there at the end of right there by the railroad viaduct. Where do you know what I'm talking about?
Like 30th.
No. This is on 16th Street by the railroad viaduct.
Oh, yeah.
But to get in that parking lot, you had to be there super early because you had to cross.
Oh yeah.
16th Street. I mean, they give you a sticker to go in, and you could park in the Coke lot at that time. Mm-hmm. They let you park in the Coke lot. Because the North 40 was all just parking for not employees at that time.
Yeah, right.
It was all customer parking. But anyway, these guys would all leave early, and I'm like, man, I want to work at the track. I'm like, well, at that time, you had to be 21.
Mm.
And I was 21, but it took me 2-plus years, honestly, to get hired.
Wow.
So... Here, you know, now I'm an employee, 1982, the first race. Freaking awesome race.
Yeah.
I mean, that was one for, until the Al Unser Jr. race in 92. Yeah, that was awesome, right?
Yeah.
I mean, Gordon Johncock won with Rick Mears almost passing him at the start line. And I'm right down there by the start-finish line at the end of the race. And it's like... This is on my bucket list. I will never give up this job.
Yeah.
And now fast forward, and it's 2017, and I still work there.
And you haven't given up this job.
Oh, no. I thought about it after years, and I'm like, nah, I can't do it. This is too much fun. Sorry about that.
No, it's all right.
Stupid phone.
You're fine. No worries.
So that's the basic story of it. And I'm in one of the prime positions. in the Grandstand E.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Box 7, 8, 9, 10.
Okay.
And I think there's like a survey out there, and everybody always says like box 11, seat number such and such is the prime spot that everybody really likes. And mm-hmm. I'm telling you right now, it is a good viewing area.
That's where we sit for quals.
Yeah.
It is a good viewing area.
So you've been, you're a yellow shirt.
Yeah.
And you have been a yellow shirt for a long, long time.
Wow.
Yep. All these badges, I just brought them in with me just to show you. I mean, got this one picture, they don't like to update them or anything like that. I even got me a little Safety Patrol.
Oh, the Lego Man. Lego Man. They did the Lego. Yeah.
Thing, oh, that's amazing.
That was super cool. One of my nephews was like at prime Lego age when the famous Lego builder came through and they had the whole display over in the museum. Mm-hmm. And then after that, they took it to the Children's Museum.
Yeah.
Okay. And so I took him there for his birthday that year. and he had made a Lego model of the IMS.
Oh, wow. Right.
And it was so cool. Oh my gosh. And yeah, we went there and he was just as into it as I was, which, you know, I was very happy about because half the time when I've taken my nieces and nephews to movies or Children's Museum or whatever, it's because secretly it's something that I want to see or do.
So well, now you've got an excuse.
So I'm always excited when they're as excited as I am because I was like, okay, good, because I was using you as a front to do this.
There you go. Right. I understand. Yeah.
But yeah, no, that was super cool. That year.
Yeah, they came out then this year for all the drivers, several of the drivers, and then they came up with the Safety Patrol.
Yeah, with the yellow shirt.
Oh, man, I got to get one.
You have to at that
You have to. You have to.
100%.
Right.
So when you joined, did you have to go through any training?
No, it was just basically you just showed up.
Yeah.
And at that time, there was an old wooden structure up between 3 and 4, and they called it the North Cottage. You just showed up. And picked up, you already had your stuff because you were supposed to come like April 30th or something like that.
Okay.
You could come pick up your hat and shirt.
Okay.
And you furnish your own pants, shoes, blah, 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 stuff like that. You just show up, pick up your stuff, and then you just show up on race day. And we didn't have any badges or anything at that time. You just showed up and then they sent you.
Okay.
And the deal was is to tell them on your application that you worked with people in this area and you would get to work with them.
Ah.
And so all my buddies worked in Eastand. So consequently, they sent me to Eastand too.
Okay.
Yes.
And I've told all my friends that I've gotten hired there. I've probably gotten 20 people over the years hired there. Just make sure you put on your application that you know me I work in Eastand. And you would like to work in Eastand.
And see, I just told Molly last week, so my mom's best friend, Zora, her sister, Mary Damjanovic, was a yellow shirt for years and years and years as well. Probably joined about the same time that you did.
Yeah.
And she worked in the garages. And so for years, I was really excited and had looked into that. And she said the same thing. You know, she said, when you apply, put my name down, and then you'll end up in the garages, this and this and this. But I told Molly I never did it because I could never.
Ooh,
I could never sacrifice.
I know.
Going not watching the race.
I know.
Yeah,
I had several opportunities. I met some guys in the Coke Lot.
Yeah.
That worked at the speed. Worked there too. We have at that time at the Coke Lot. We used to have an employee campground in the Coke Lot, and then they bought the Georgetown Village Apartments.
Oh yeah.
And then knocked those down and made it a parking lot and a campground for the employees again.
Sure.
Well, we met these guys that worked in the garages. And one of them at that time ran the pit lane.
Oh yeah.
With Jackaroot.
Oh wow.
Wow.
While he was the race guy.
Yeah. Yeah.
And those guys were like, man, if you ever want to come to the garage area or work the pit lane or I can always use a helper with Jackaroot. And I was like, ooh. That sounds so to be right there in the heat of the battle, so to speak.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But then you miss
so much else.
So much.
You miss watching it.
Yeah. It's
because I'm basically getting paid
to sit there and watch the race.
I'm just standing there and watch the race.
Yeah.
Stand there.
Right. I mean, my vantage point, I don't even know what the tickets are anymore because we don't tear them off. At one time, we used to tear off the stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't even know what it is anymore. The price, because I don't even look at them anymore.
No.
I don't even hold them because they used to hand them to you and you had to tear them off.
Yeah, well, right. And it was a whole thing because there were two tariffs. There was a one for regular, then there was a second if there was a rain delay.
It was a rain check.
Yep. Then the year that they ended up running it on Tuesday, I mean, they'd already torn off both of the perforated edges.
Well,
by the time Tuesday, it was like you could hold up one ticket for like 40 people.
You didn't even have to. Yeah, it was
you
just didn't have to have a
anybody,
ticket.
Anybody, yeah, anybody in the town would just come because everybody from out of town has left.
So many stories of that freaking day.
Well,
that was my first Indy 500.
And I can't. What year was that again?
97.
Oh, you're sure?
Yeah.
Is that what it was?
It was either 96 or 97 because I was. It was like fifth or sixth grade.
Sounds about right.
I think it was 97 because I think it was the end of my sixth grade.
Was it year Bobby Rahal won, wasn't it?
Oh, I don't. All right, let me look it up.
Okay. But I remember that because it rained on race day, and it rained on Monday. Okay, so here we're going to have it on Tuesday.
And they tried. I mean, they ran laps on Sunday and Monday.
Right, and so on Tuesday, they were like, anybody show up. And we got to park underneath the grandstand.
Oh, wow.
Because we needed help so bad. And we showed up, and you didn't even have – there was nobody at the gates. There was nobody at the main gate at 16th and Georgetown.
Oh, that's
because
funny.
We didn't have enough employees.
That's funny.
And
oh, shit, no, it was Ari Leindike who won that year.
Okay.
Yeah.
But it was a madhouse in East End because everybody got to set in East End wanted to set in East End.
Oh, no.
And you got 22 seats in a row.
Yeah.
Okay. You got 1 through 11 and 12 through 22 on the next row for the same letter. A has this, but we don't have A and B rows anymore.
Yeah.
Does it start at C? Maybe it's D. A, B, and C, I think, are gone. Because we call that the dead man zone now. After the 73-500, they took out all of those seats. But, I mean, it was like 30 people trying to get in 22 seats.
Oh, wow.
And it was like, people were coming up with the ticket, and our instructions was, if anybody has the ticket, they get the seat.
Well, yeah.
Yeah.
And you have to ask the other people to leave.
Yeah.
Well, how do you ask them to leave? I mean, how do you enforce this?
Well.
Right? I mean,
that's what I say to Molly every time she says, well, we're not allowed to do this. I said, how are they going to enforce it?
Right.
Because I'm very pro-breaking rules, so.
Oh, that's the way to do it.
Yeah.
unless somebody tells you not to.
Exactly.
Then you do it.
Easy to ask forgiveness.
There you go.
You know, they're like, we can't do this. How are you going to enforce that, though?
Right.
How are you going to enforce it? So.
Oh, right.
Yeah. So, yeah, right. Asking people to get up out of their seats.
Right. I just stood and looked at the crowd, and I'm just like this with my hands out, and I'm like, come on, people. Look at all these empty seats and B stand and
right. Well, and I will
Southwest
say
Southwest Vista. And
I will say our seats were in Southwest Vista that year, and we went back to our section. In fact, we went back to our seats on Monday. On Tuesday, we moved up a little higher because it was pretty cleared out. But I mean, Southwest Vista is right next to Sandy. I mean, they were still great seats.
Yeah,
but it's not the vantage point that you get.
It's
in
not
East
the
stand.
Same.
Yeah,
no, which is why we sit in E for Quarles and not Southwest Vista. It's
totally different.
Yeah,
it is.
Yeah,
I mean those are the best seats in the house as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, they're very good. The first 10-plus years, I worked right now I'm in 7, 8, 9, 10.
Mm-hmm.
Box 7, 8, 9, 10. And the stairs go up and they split, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, the first, 10-plus years, I worked in 12, 13, 14, 15. And you'd lose a little bit of the pit lane just one box over.
Mm-hmm.
But I did develop a relationship with this family that I still go over and see on race morning.
Well, yeah.
And there's hugs all around. And I've seen this one girl, and this like a couple years ago. I'm like, you're drinking. And I've known her since 82, 83. And she's like, well, I'm 21 now. And I'm like, okay, smoke. Obviously, she's older than that.
Yeah, yeah.
But, yeah, I mean, I've seen these families come in. And at that time, it was the tickets were willed, basically, to people. And get that seat, somebody had to die.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And it's still almost that way. It's a tough seat.
They have changed the rules that you can only will your tickets once.
Okay.
So you can will them to and it has to be a fairly direct relative. So a sibling, a child, or a grandchild.
Okay.
You can go the other way, but I don't know why you would. Mm-hmm. And so I've said for years, you know, that because the tickets are in my mom's name, which I told her when we started buying tickets that we should put them in my name just so that we wouldn't have to mess around with the whole willing situation.
Right.
But Nobody listens to a 12-year-old. I also said we should have made the kitchen twice as big. But yeah, so
well,
but there
I mean, you could have done this and said, "Hey, your address is at my house." So even though she might have died, the tickets still come in her name. You can still keep them.
Well, what I said to her was, when she dies, you know, because she said, "Well, should I just, you know, should I transfer them to you now?" And my sister and I both said, "No, you transfer them to one of our children."
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
because that's the greatest longevity of the ticket life.
Right.
So.
And they're not going to get rid of them. They're going to because they know that you're going to go.
Hell no.
So, right.
Hell no. And so.
Right.
So yeah. So now my sister's pregnant. So she's the first, like, blood grandchild of my mom's kids.
Okay.
So yeah. So we're like, all right, baby Hearst. That's who these tickets are going to go to. Because
cool.
I was like, well, I was like, no, don't will them to me at this point. I was like, the time for that has come and gone. Let's
right.
Let's will them to a child.
Right.
So that we can get the most out of this.
Right.
But yeah, no, those tickets. And I hear there's like a 10-year waiting list.
I couldn't tell you. I just know that I've seen. For years upon years upon years upon years, it was the same people every year.
Mm-hmm.
And it still is
mm-hmm.
where I'm at now. I mean, because I've been there over 20 years now.
Yeah.
Where I'm at. And I mean, but the whole time I've worked in East End. And it was, like I said, 7, 8, 9, 10, and then 11, 12, 13, 14 for 10, 15 years, and then
mm-hmm.
moved over one box. And I was like, oh, thank you. This is so much better.
It's amazing.
It's so much better because now I can see all the way down the pit lane. And
mm-hmm.
the other one, you can see just the end of the pit
just
lane.
Just the end of it and not, yeah.
And at that time frame, when I first started, you weren't supposed to watch the race. And you're still not supposed to.
Sure.
But okay. now they encourage the employees to tweet during the race. And
that's nice.
So it gets out there on social media, so it generates a buzz, stuff like that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you've met Doug Bowles. He's a personal person.
Oh.
He loves to see the tweets during the race.
He loves it. Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
That's one of the things I love the most about him. Well, he's so approachable.
Oh, definitely.
And I think that's, I mean.
He's not Tony George, that's for sure. So.
No.
I got one good thing to say about him. And some people are on the fence. Some people hate him because of the IRL. And I look at it like that whole thing right there was, he was saving the Speedway.
Yeah,
he was.
In his mind, Hart wasn't going to come one year, and he didn't want to be known as the one that was going to kill the Indianapolis 500.
Absolutely. Well, and I think that, I actually read, I told Molly, I don't remember where it was. I'm sure I sent it to you at the time, but it was a really good article that talked about the split. And it was somebody who was involved on the CART end, or maybe on the IRL end, but it was somebody that, like, got involved to kind of help smooth things over. It was, you know, too little too late.
Yeah.
Like, they hired this person when they were already past the point of no return.
To
the split was going to happen.
Kind of
yeah.
Like
it was like a mediator.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
But it was like they should have hired him, you know, a year in
right.
advance.
Right.
And something that he said, which I thought was really important, is that, you know, everybody had really good intentions from CART and IRL.
Yeah.
You know, everybody thought that they had the sport's best interest at heart, and nobody came at it from a malicious standpoint to ruin this side or ruin
yeah.
that side. Everybody wanted to see the sport flourish.
Right.
They just didn't have great communication about
right.
how to do that.
Right.
Yeah.
But if you look back in history at that time, CART was ruled by Roger Penske,
mm-hmm.
and Ganassi was coming up,
mm-hmm.
and a few other, like Derek Walker.
Yep.
And Pat Patrick, people like that,
mm-hmm.
and Newman Haas.
Yeah.
Right? They were ruled by that.
Which
and they
I think
didn't,
at the time
they didn't
that
give a fuck about the small teams.
No,
they didn't.
They
did
and
not.
I think at the time that it was formed, when it was like a four owners, buy owners kind of thing, they were looking out for teams when it started.
Yeah.
But then it grew into this thing where it ended up just being, you know, the monopoly of the big teams
right.
and fuck the small teams.
Right.
And it never should have gotten that
no,
way.
No.
They should have stuck with, like, okay, if we're run by team owners, if we're all together as team owners, it should be all team owners.
Right.
And that's where I think CART went wrong.
Yeah. Yeah, they slit their own throat.
They
I
did.
Mean,
they
I,
did.
And,
they
well,
did.
And anybody that split from the Indy 500, because regardless of what the rest of your season does, I mean, that's the Super Bowl of this sport.
Right.
If you have the Indy 500, you will win that war.
Right.
Period.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't pretty for a lot of us.
I've got a picture that from the Indianapolis Star that Gary Varvel drew.
Mm-hmm.
When a few of the teams started coming back, and one of them was Michael Andretti. And I'll take a picture of it and send it to you.
Please.
It's Michael Andretti sitting in a high chair. Tony George feeding him a plate, and it has a dead crow on it. Because all the Andretti's said that as soon as they split, all the Andretti's are going, oh, those Indy cars are not safe. The IRL cars are not safe. And they did have a problem when they backed them into the wall because that transmission and everything was hard. Yeah. It was harder, stiffer.
Yeah.
Right? And it was a lot and the car had a different wheelbase and everything. But when they came back, Mario Andretti's like, oh, no. We'll never come back to the Speedway. They just slit their own throat. And I went, okay. I mean, that was a big Mario and A.J. Foyt never liked each other anyway. But that really threw a big wrench into that. Oh, really?
Well,
who are you, Mario, without the Indianapolis 500? Even though you've only won it one time.
Yeah.
Everybody knows you because you've led so many races.
But, yeah, it's like if you want to talk about who's the GOAT, it's clearly A.J. Foyt.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, so from your perspective, because we are going to talk, we just thought our Valentine's Day episode is going to be about the breakup between IRL and CART.
Oh, I'd like talking that if I could.
Yeah. So, we'll take it now.
Go and then for
we
it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well,
So as a fan and as a yellow shirt.
Yeah, see, I have to look at it both ways.
Yeah. So we want to hear your take on it as a fan and as an employee.
Because I've been a fan of the Indianapolis 500 since. I started listening to it on the radio, Sid Collins days.
Yeah.
You know, and
stay tuned
for the greatest spectacle in racing and stuff like that. You know, when he coined that phrase.
Yeah.
And
actually, to be clear, it was a woman who coined that phrase.
Oh, was it really?
No, it actually.
Well, he started using it.
I say, yeah. He made it famous.
Yeah.
But it was actually a woman who coined it, and it was a female journalist in the 40s, 30s,
he stole
or 40s.
That some bitch then, didn't he?
He sure did.
He took it and made it his own.
Right.
But it was actually a woman who coined that phrase.
Right. But I have to look at it both ways.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But because for years, I worked four qualifying days when we had four qualifying days.
Mm-hmm.
And race day. So I worked 5 days during the month of May.
Yeah.
And now, when they knocked it down to 2 days, I worked that a couple times. And I'm like, the whole, it's not the same. The 2 days are not the same. And now when they do this, they actually have the pole day on the second day. That's totally different. I can't knock it because they're trying to get people involved again.
Right.
And trying to get you to come back 2 days.
Well, and we discussed that, you know, and when they knocked it to 2 days, you know, how they do it, where you qualify for the Fast 9 on what should be bump day. And hopefully this year what will actually be bump day.
Right.
And then they have the shootout on Sunday. It's so that you have fans both days. And I get that. But it's like, I mean, I grew up. This is the house I grew up in.
Yeah.
Three and a half blocks from the track.
Right.
You know, so I grew up knowing the 4 days of qualifications. I mean, I remember even, you know, in the early 2000s, there were still 4 days of qualifications. And we went down to a cousin's wedding in Gatlinburg. And it was one of the qualifications weekends.
Right.
And even though the family came from everywhere, we were the only family that actually came from Indiana at that time.
Yeah.
We still had quals on the TV in the cabin we all stayed in the entire weekend because it was Indy 500 qualifications.
Right. And they televised quite a bit of it.
They would televise, I mean, and both weekends and all this business. And so I appreciate, you know, that they're trying to get fans and stands both days. And I appreciate a lot of things they're trying to do to bring in a younger crowd because it was, you know, older crowd that was really dedicated to come 4 days.
Yep.
And with the cart split and all that, it's like you ended up, there's almost like a generational gap. And I feel like they're doing a lot of really good things to bridge that and to bring people back into it and to generate interest in like our age group. And
well, the problem is now is that we've skipped a generation.
We have.
Mm-hmm.
And because I took my kids I got a divorce in 98. So I've already been working at the Speedway obviously since 82.
Yeah.
But I started taking my kids every May now because I have them on the weekends and I'm taking the kids to the track. They grew up playing with other employees' kids.
Mm-hmm.
And so then I consequently stopped working like 4 days at the Speedway on qualifying days. And now I'm just strictly a fan again over in turn three or turn two, depending on what day of the week it is or something like that. But I got to look at it both ways because I'm a fan for, we'll just say, 29 days out of 30. Well,
sure.
It's 31 days in May.
But
and there's actually a book, I believe it was called 31 Days in May. And this was written in the I think early 60s, I think it was.
I think I've seen that
title.
Late
50s? Yeah. And when I was in junior high, I checked out every book in the library in Greencastle Junior High. Every book. And read all these books. So consequently, I could name all the winners.
Wow.
From 1911 to like 1960 something.
That's awesome.
But I got to look at it both ways because I'm an employee, but I'm an employee not counting that road race that we have, which I understand why the Speedway is doing it. Let's put it that way. Yeah. Trying to keep, hey, it's fresh in the mind, you know, but sure, it's a road race and I'm not a road race for Indy cars. I like ovals.
Oh no, you're in good company.
No, you're in very good. We call ourselves, we always say it, we are speed whores.
There you go.
And you don't hit speeds on road courses.
Well, now to take that back, Road America is pretty quick, fast.
That's true.
That's true.
But it's so big of a track, it's a pain in the butt to go everywhere. And you got to do it. You got to go around everywhere in order to see it. But yeah, I'm an oval person. But.
Yeah, that's why we're not mad at Ed Carpenter. I mean,
right.
his adopted dad was Tony George, and we're like, we get it. You only race ovals? Like, we get it. We're big oval fans. Right. I understand.
We need more ovals. We need to go back to Chicagoland. We need to go back to Kentucky.
Chicagoland would be awesome. Kentucky, I love the Kentucky track.
Oh, shit, I went. A buddy of mine called me. He worked at Belterra, and he's like, hey, man, I got tickets. You want to come down to this? And I'm like, okay. And I drove down there, and I went, shit.
Oh.
It's like 2 hours, dude.
It's
why
haven't
I been coming to this race?
Oh, everybody should go to that. I mean, I would love to see an IndyCar race there again.
Oh,
well, and you know Sarah Fisher still holds the track record for speed.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a great track. There's not a bad seat in the house there.
No.
It's one of those like Bomarito where it doesn't matter where you are, you're seeing great racing the whole time.
Right.
And it's close enough that everybody from here would go right on down to it.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Everybody from
the same way Chicagoland.
Yeah.
It was 2.5 hours.
Two and a half, 3 hours.
Juliet.
Yeah.
Boom.
Oh, perfect.
Camping.
Yeah, there.
We camped at Kentucky Speedway, too.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, it was just a party freaking time. It was a good time. So, I don't know if they'll ever come back.
Yeah.
I really don't because of insurance reasons.
I know.
Because of the Dan Weldon accident.
Mm.
That's when the next year, bam, all the mile-and-a-half ovals were gone.
That's true.
And I don't know if they'll ever come back. I mean... I would love it.
Yeah.
I would love it, too. I don't know if there's a better way to...
There's a lot.
Yeah. I mean, there's a lot of speculation you can make about how you could have the shorter ovals be safe and, you know, and do your best to prevent an accident like that again. But a lot of it just can't predict.
The speed on the mile and a half, you're pushing 215.
Yeah.
All the time around the tracks on the mile and a half.
Well, and what was it that I think Joseph Newgarden said, maybe about Bomarito, maybe it was a tricky track. No, I think it was Bomarito that he said, you know, like, you just really can't even get into a groove because every time you start to, I mean, you're just always doing something.
Yeah.
Iowa.
Iowa was definitely like that.
Yeah, it was about Iowa. He was just like,
no break.
He's like, there's no break. Like, you are just concentrated the entire time.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I think that that's a different type of oval driving than ours.
Yeah.
Definitely.
I mean, I think that if ours wasn't 500 miles, that it would not be as significant.
True. Well, it's just a history thing.
Well, all the pageantry,
Right.
But
when
I mean,
you go to other races, because I went to Pocono the last 2 years.
Okay.
And there's nothing.
Really?
There's nothing pre-race. I mean, you go to all these.
That's just sad.
2 years in a row, I lived the high life, and I went to 8 IndyCar races. I went to Kentucky. I went to Nashville. I went to Richmond.
Mm.
I used to belong to the IndyCar fan club, and at that time, you could ride a bus to Richmond, Virginia for $11.
Round trip. That's not bad at all.
Yeah.
But you had to buy your ticket and buy your hotel, your food, blah, blah, blah. But $11.
$11 and
oh
they're driving
God.
You?
You can even drive there for that.
Oh, hell no.
I know.
No.
Hell no. And we went to Homestead. Now, the bus didn't go to Homestead. I drove to Homestead 2 years in a row because I wanted to check that out. And I went the first year and went, okay, this is cool. It's warm.
Mm-hmm.
It's cold. It's snowing at home because it was in March.
Yeah.
Yep.
You know, but... Yeah, I mean, I lived the high life for 2 years going to these races, and they were all ovals.
Oh, man.
Now, this last past season, I went to a lot of races again. Because we went to the first race I went to was the Grand Prix of Indianapolis, yep. and then the 500, and then yeah. the next week.
You went to Belle Isle?
Went to Belle Isle. Okay. Doug and I went to Belle Isle with Mr. Ted. Now, Tom didn't go, but Ted went with us, too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And another school teacher, Monty's school teacher, went with us. And then the 2 weeks later, was it 2 weeks later? I ended up going to
Texas.
Iowa. Yeah, I'm going to go to Texas this next year, though.
Okay.
I'm going to go again. I went once, and I did not enjoy it because it was hot.
It's fucking Texas.
Elio led every freaking lap of that race. It was not even a race
then. Oh, man.
Ugh.
But we went to a lot of races this year. And yeah. I'm going to do it
again.
Well,
you did Mid-Ohio.
Yep. Went to Road America.
Yep. You did Bomarito.
Oh, yeah.
St. Louis.
Gateway.
Yeah.
Pocono.
Yep. Went to Pocono then the next week. Pocono was on a Sunday. The next week, back that up. Was it Pocono? Well, Pocono and Iowa were the same week, basically.
Yeah, they're like, you just flip over. Yeah.
It was like a Sunday and then a Saturday.
It was a good time, man. The job I've got now where I can take off and I can go.
That's nice.
Awesome.
So
it's a cool event to do.
So as a fan, you're more of an oval fan. So.
Oh, definitely. But to get my fix, mm-hmm. I had to go to road course races this year.
Well, and our first... I mean, we went to the Indy GP, the GP of Indy.
Right.
And then the Mid-Ohio was our first road course on the road.
Right.
And that's a great track.
It was fun. It was a good time.
And the grounds are great, and all the people there were awesome. That was one of the things that we said that we loved.
You didn't camp, though, did you?
We did.
Oh, you did?
Oh, yeah.
Why didn't you camp with us?
Because we didn't...
You didn't know where we were at.
Well, we had
met
you yet.
Oh, wait
a minute.
We hadn't met
you yet.
Okay. But you hadn't met Doug.
No.
Oh, you had when you walked up that time? You didn't even know
Doug? No, that was the first time.
Oh, my God, when you two walked up, I thought you knew him from...
No.
Wow,
because
I was sitting there when you walked up.
That's
no, we had interacted on Twitter, and it said that, you know, we want to meet up and all that, and then we walk up and we see his big sign with, you know, the...
Indy Camping.
Yeah,
Indy
and it says, at Indy 500 Camping.
Right.
And I was like, Indy 500 Camping!
Right.
And they were like, hey! And I was like, we're Fast Cars, Fast Girls!
Right, there you go.
You know,
right.
And then they yelled, and so, you know, we just sat down and just were fast friends. But no, that was the first time that we met any of you guys.
It's a good group. I mean, when we travel in a group like that, it's fun.
It is.
Well,
just like when you were going to go to the 24 this year, you're going to meet some really fun people.
Oh,
and nobody is an asshole in the group that we're with.
That's what I really like about it.
I mean, we met guys. We have a group that comes from New York every year now, too.
That's awesome.
Damn.
So with the split, so as a fan and as an employee, where did you fall on all
I that? Had to be side with the Indianapolis Motor Speedway for what Tony George was doing. Because, like I said in the past, he was protecting his and family's investment. Because how would you like to be go down in history as the guy that killed the Indianapolis 500?
That's not
right. Or the family that, because we're not Holman family now. Basically, we're the George family.
Mm-hmm.
And who wants to be known as the person that killed the Indianapolis 500? So he's got to protect his investment and his family's investment. I dig it. I dig that part.
Sure.
I wasn't mad at the CART guys, but as May came along, that shit started really pissing me off when all these guys were like, well, fuck the 500, fuck the Speedway, who needs milk? You're going to be back.
Yeah.
You'll be back one day, fuckers.
I'll tell you what, my favorite is the years that they tried to run, what was it, the Michigan 500?
Oh, the US 500?
Yeah,
this
on the same day.
Okay, that was way before any kind of social media,
mm-hmm.
right? And they had that accident on the first, before they even got the green flag.
Mm-hmm.
As they were coming to the green flag.
Yeah, somebody crashed on the fucking parade.
Vassar.
Yeah.
And he used the pole car.
Vassar.
It was Jimmy. I watched it on the, I think it was one of those 30 for 30 things.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Somebody put it on Twitter a couple weeks ago, and I watched that. It was an ESPN thing.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah.
And Jimmy Vassar did a Kogan and just turned the car right into the other two front guys
stuffs
in the front row
on the parade
and
lap.
And wreck half the freaking field. Well, within 5 minutes of this happening, there's a buzz in the grandstand because I think they started their race like a half hour before the 500.
That's about right.
Yeah.
And there's a buzz through the grandstand, and it's going through the grandstand what happened in Michigan.
That's amazing.
Oh, and this is
way before
any kind of
social media. Somebody got a phone. Yes. Yeah, somehow
there you go.
Somebody knew. And it's
it was crazy.
Did you hear that the US 500?
Yeah, they wrecked half the field. and they're going to come back out with backup cars. And we're like, I mean,
yeah,
there was a lot of people laughing at that shit.
Oh, I'm sure.
And I can tell you right now, from my perspective, there was no empty seats.
Yeah.
There might have been in other stands, but East Stand was our normal capacity.
I mean, yeah.
But I looked at it, and then as well, who was it first that came back? I think it was Ganassi.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And he came back, and then Penske came back.
And
then Andretti came back. One by one. And then, you had a few people like Jerry Forsythe that was like, fuck this. I am never going to race in Indianapolis again.
Okay.
And he was one of the big guys, too, that was in on that. Jerry Forsythe and Kevin Calvonian. Is that how you say his name? That was part of KV Racing.
Yeah.
But at least he saw the handwriting on the wall. He's like, inevitably, we're all going to be back at Indianapolis. Mm. And you knew it might be 5 years, it might be 6 years, 10 years, but
it's going to happen.
It's not. I mean, you still got the greatest event in the world.
Yeah.
You can't be an open wheel driver and not give respect to the 500.
Right.
What, even if you are strictly F1, you still give respect to the 500.
Well, look what happened this year.
Yeah,
with Alonso. We had an F1 driver come and race. Because he really wanted to do it. His team sucked, and he knew it. And he's got a great manager with, God darn it, what's his name? That's from Zionsville. The team manager's from Zionsville.
Brown?
Yeah, Zach Brown.
Yeah.
He had that marketing out of Zionsville, and he's like, yeah, go, man. We'll get this to work. And an active driver comes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's insane.
That's, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's...
I mean,
I know.
How are you going to not be here? Seriously, if you're going to be an IndyCar driver, how are you not going to be there? And all those guys are, oh, yeah, screw that. We're not going back. And eventually, they're all back.
Yeah.
Now, there's where we lost our fan base.
Yes.
Because nobody knew what the hell was going on.
That's exactly what happened.
And now you got two different series split.
Well, we didn't have the advent of social media.
Right.
And so it was simply press releases, and if you sought it out, you could find the information. But it wasn't readily available to everybody.
From my perspective, from hearing people that are the taxicab fans, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I don't even call those races. To me, those are just events. No.
Yeah.
NASCAB.
NAPCAR, whatever you want to call it.
I like NAPCAR.
Yeah.
That's what happened this year.
It's just... Well, I know these drivers. They're American drivers. Okay, yeah, you're correct on that.
Thank you.
But are they the best drivers in the world? Not necessarily.
No.
I mean, you could put, not a fan of Danica, put her in a taxi cab and she could still drive one.
Yeah.
Not very good, but she's still out there racing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But I just, IndyCar's where everybody wants to be. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's how many taxi cab drivers... Oh, I love driving IndyCar.
Right?
Yeah.
Whereas how many IndyCar drivers say, oh, I'd love to drive NASCAR.
Yeah.
They all say, oh, I'm open to that opportunity. I'd enjoy it, this and that. But it's nobody's big goal to drive in NASCAR.
Right.
No.
But unfortunately, with that split is where NASCAR gained a bunch of fans is because they didn't have that drama. They didn't have that turmoil. And so, you know... Nobody knew, should I be a kart fan? Should I be an IRL fan?
Well, yeah.
All the shit's happening. It's like, I like some guys here, I like some guys here. I don't know what's going to happen with us. Oh, but I know all these guys, and they seem to have their shit together.
Right, and we lost big names.
We did.
In that time frame with Rick Mears retiring, and Mario, and then Foyt, and blah, blah, blah. All these other guys that are Bobby Rahal, and Danny Sullivan, and these names.
Had
all
that
retiring.
Not happened, NASCAR would have never been bigger than IndyCar, in my opinion.
It all happened at the same time.
At the same time.
Right, it all, I mean,
and it
like
was like
weird.
A perfect storm.
Right, for NASCAR.
Yes.
And not a perfect storm for...
No,
for
it was a perfect storm in all the wrong ways for us in open wheel.
Right.
I think had that not happened, NASCAR would not have ended up with the fan base and notoriety that it has now.
Right.
I think that had we had a stable open wheel league and there wasn't all this unknown... that the fans would have just stayed there and said, well, we know these drivers and this is that.
Right, yeah. I don't know how we're going to ever get it back. I mean, my kids have the opportunity now to go with me anytime I go to the track because one of these
Yeah.
Pretty much carte blanche. I can get in any
day. You're leaving one of those with you. We didn't mention that beforehand, but if any credentials you bring with you, you leave at least one. That's part of the interview process. I'm kidding.
No, it's fine. But I think with NASCAR's stars, everybody's retiring.
Yep.
Junior's out, Danica's out, everybody's leaving. Now, I think they're going to see a decline
in
NASCAR.
Well, they already have.
Yeah.
I mean, all those tracks are cutting out seats.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Now, the first time that we went to Daytona for the 24, there was a grandstand on the backstretch.
Huh.
And then they knocked part of that grandstand off, but they left what they called the Budweiser patio, I think it was.
Sounds about
And
right.
we stood up there.
Sounds about right for NASCAR.
We stood up there and watched, because the back straightaway going into the bus stop.
Ah, okay.
And it was a good vantage point. Because you can see them over there on the, coming into International Horseshoe, and the Ferris wheel's between both sides, and that Lake Lloyd is right there, everything's going on. It's a cool little patio, but way up in the air. And then the next year, it's gone.
Oh, well, damn it.
Yeah, it's gone.
Damn it.
And all these tracks are, like Richmond's, took out seats.
Mm-hmm.
All these tracks are minus in seats, so you don't see
that it's
there's nobody sitting there.
Yeah.
Well, and that's, we've talked about that, like for the Brickyard and other events we've been, I mean, like even the SCCA, which we had an awesome time at that.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's just, it's funny because when you go to the IMS, it's such a huge event and there are so, there's more grandstand seats there than anywhere.
Right.
And any venue, when you have that many grandstand seats, you can shut down sections and you know, and kind of herd people into certain areas, but it still looks empty.
Right.
You could have 100,000 people in those stands, and it will still look bare bones.
This is what we have talked to. I mean, did you happen to go when we had the couple IMSA races at the Speedway years ago?
No,
it was called the Rolex Series at that time.
Okay. Yeah, yeah.
Okay, I think it was two of them, maybe three.
I was living up in Fort
Wayne. Oh my God, it was so fun. And I was like, I'm definitely going
to
go. This is what.
Yeah, they need
it. It's like 3 hour race or hour and a half, whatever it was. And I'm like, This is why I want to go to Daytona, because I 24 hours of this crap.
Yeah.
And it's hilarious. I mean, this is good. I want to see this.
It's good racing.
And
yeah.
We've been trying to get them back because they came in on the taxicab weekend.
Oh, okay.
And they raced on Friday. And they had a huge crowd.
Mm-hmm.
But it didn't look like it because everybody was in the grass.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Because everybody's in the infield watching from there.
Because that's...
Right, that's the reason why IMSA doesn't want to come back to the Speedway. And every time that we see Doug Bowles, like in the winter, we're always like, "Can we get an IMSA race again?"
We've actually started to say that too.
Believe me, we are in constant negotiation.
Well,
IMSA's owned by NASCAR, though.
I know. Well, and we at the goading of Doug Thornton have say now. Can we get an IMSA race? And at least 12 hours.
At least 12 hours.
Right, I'll settle for six. But see, their events...
Start high.
I would love 24 hours at the Brickyard sells itself.
Sells itself.
But you'll see that what the 24
Think
is
about,
like
I
a
mean,
Daytona.
Boy Scouts and Girl Scouts, you could create a whole badge over like doing shit to help out other people at the track for Boy Scouts and Girl Scouts, and you could guarantee yourselves hundreds. I mean, I'm not saying that I want to be charged with that because I don't want to be around the fucking kids at the race. I'm just saying.
But you'll see...
Liability.
You'll see
I'm not saying I'm in charge of it. The track themselves, Molly.
You'll
also
see
liability.
When you go to Daytona for the 24, how their setup is different than anything that we could ever do at the Speedway.
I'm very excited for that because I've never been to that track. I am excited to see the whole NASCAR museum and all that because their headquarters is there. Well, I mean, I hear you. I'm just saying, I like to look at things comparatively.
But
I know
I
ours
understand,
is better. But.
And we go inside because of the gift shop. And that's where the ticket box is at, too. So you got to get your tickets. So, hey, we go inside for that. You want to tour the museum? No. That's what we hear. Do you want to take it for the music? No, thank you.
No, thank you. We're from Speedway.
No, we like fast cars.
We're from Indianapolis.
Yeah,
no, thank you.
Yeah.
Fuck you. We're from Indianapolis.
Yeah, fuck you. We're from Indianapolis. Now, that shirt, like I said, only comes out for the 24. For that, I mean, get up on Saturday morning, put that shirt on with my checkered shorts.
Yeah,
let's go.
And we're ready to go. And people know me by that freaking shirt. I can't believe how many people walk up and we're in a fan fest before the race and people are walking up going, hey, love the shirt. We're from Shelbyville or whatever, you know.
Well, we are actually going to. So we've been inspired by your shirt.
We are.
And so Molly and I were both born in Speedway. She moved away at 8 years old. So we're going to have shirts this year for Carbon that say, fuck you, we're from Speedway.
So. We printed up, I printed up some ones from, you see the commercials on TV all the time.
Like Teespring or...
The t-shirts print up for family events. And stuff. Yeah. I printed up a bunch of them years ago that said, hell yes, we're from Speedway, Indiana. Because they wouldn't print up, fuck you, we're from Speedway.
Yeah, we're going to have to go
I even got a phone call while I'm doing this online from them that said, you do know you have a cuss word.
Yeah.
And I'm like, yeah, can you not print it? Well, we just wanted to let you know that there is a cuss word in your draft.
You're like, I don't think anybody types fuck accidentally.
Oh, right. Well, no, this was the hell yes.
Oh.
Hell yes, we're from Speedway, Indiana. Do you know that there's a cuss word?
It's not a cuss word, it's in the Bible.
I know, but they called it to
verify.
Yeah, we're
going to have to go get our own.
I've got a lady phone number I can give you both, and she'll print anything.
Beautiful.
And it's a good price, too.
Oh, beautiful. Okay, even better.
I mean, one shirt, 20 shirts. I've already talked to her on the phone. She's like, there's a tweet, a Facebook post that she has, like, it's the new chatter of Avon.
Oh, okay.
And then there's an old chatter of Avon. Well, she's on both of them, and she can do print-up shirts.
Awesome.
So, asked her, I said, one or how many? She goes, well... And she quoted me a price of like $15 for one shirt, with the half sleeves. And I said, now, you do print out cuss words, right? She goes, what do you mean? And I said, I got a shirt that says, fuck you, we're from Indianapolis. And she's like, oh, yeah, I'd print that.
I'm sure there's a line.
Well, that's probably because I want for Carb Day or for some of the Quals Days for us to have some Fast Cars, Fast Girls shirts.
That'd be cool.
So,
yeah.
But they might say on the front, fuck you for Speedway.
Now,
so.
Did you see my Carb Day shirt?
Fuck you, it's Carb Day?
Yeah, fuck you, you fucking fuck, it's Carb Day.
Yeah.
Fuck you, that was a $30 t-shirt, I wear it one fucking day a year.
Yeah, but it gets its use.
Right.
But no, I've taken a picture of you in that shirt as
well.
Long before we met.
That's my Carb Day shirt. That comes out one day
fuck
a year.
Fuck you, fucking fuck, it's
yeah,
Carb
nobody will get that if I wore that at any other event.
No.
Right.
No. It's only 8,500 fans. Like, you say Carb Day, and they're like, oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah, we have to explain to people when we go to other facilities.
And they're like, what's
Carb
Day?
What do you mean Carb? Is that like where everybody doesn't eat carbohydrates or something?
you're like, yeah, because we're really concerned about our health.
Yeah, there, you
tracks.
There you go, right.
Sure, that's what we do in Indiana.
That's the problem. Yeah, it's the carbs.
Right.
Oh. So tell us, what's the craziest thing you've seen? Tell us some stories, because I know you've seen some stuff. You got to give us a couple.
Definitely. Go back into the 80s, and the first day at Quals was called the second biggest sporting event in the world, because you had well over 100,000 people that would show up for one day at Quals.
Yeah.
Show up live. Not even.
Right.
I mean, and it was televised on network television.
And we used to have, and this is before, not that this is bad, before MAD was invented. Mothers Against Drunk Driving.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
And people would come and just get obliterated on the first day of Quals. And I would see frats organizations show up, on the first day of Quals, and they would just drink themselves silly. And one year, I remember it rained during the Quals, and one guy was so drunk, his group moved away from him and just left him in the rain. Because he passed out.
Right.
Okay, and then we used to have a guy that he was a Napa district manager or something like that over so many stores. He would hand out tickets to his customers, and they would show up, and he would have cases upon cases upon cases of beer.
Oh, my God.
And soda.
Yeah.
And it got to the point where he fucking stopped bringing it because the crowd stopped. Stopped coming.
Huh.
And that was about the time
the split.
Around that time is when that all stopped. But when all that started about the drinking and driving and stuff like that, the huge parties and all these frat guys, I'm talking not 10, I'm talking 20,
like,
and 30.
Mm-hmm.
A big
chapters
group
on chapters,
up.
Yeah.
And they're all over the place in East End. Because when you worked at the Speedway, you worked in the same place you worked race day. Oh. For the qualifying days, you worked in the same place. You might not have been in the exact same stand, but you were in the
same area. You weren't going to work race day in turn one and be in turn four for
quals. Not unless you requested something like that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And if you got out of Grandstand E, it was difficult to get back.
I never asked
to leave your area.
Yeah.
I say same with garages. I know that from Mary. Right. It was the same thing. Like, once you were in the garages, you didn't request to leave because you were never going to get back in.
Right. Now, it scared me a few years ago when we had the Rolling Stones race. The Rolling Stones race. The Rolling Stones concert. They asked for volunteers, and I said, well, what would be our job? And they're like, gates. And I went, I'm clearing one thing up. I will work gates for this event.
Mm-hmm.
But if I show up for race day and I'm supposed to be at gates, I'm going to be calling some people.
I'm going to riot.
Right. And then the same thing happened when we had the airplane race last year.
Yeah.
They asked for volunteers. And so now I'm in Northeast Vista.
Okay.
North Vista. Mm-hmm. Working for the airplane race.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I was worried when I got my stuff the next year that I was going to be in East End. Am I going to be in North Vista now or whatever? I guess you could say seniority now.
Yeah.
And they want to keep you happy because, okay, so this guy's like, okay, so if you're watching the race and we catch you, you're fired. If you're smoking in the grandstands, we catch you, you're fired. You're taking pictures, we catch you, you're fired.
Oh, my God.
You're not to watch the race, you're to face the crowd. And we were like, hang on there, dude. This doesn't work for a stadium. This is a different kind of stadium.
Yeah.
We need to know what's going on behind us, too.
You have to know.
You have to know.
Right?
Because you have to know what's going on so that you can know what the best plan of action is to direct the traffic.
Right.
If there's a yellow or a red, you know that you're going to have a mass influx of people leaving the stands to go down.
Right.
You have to be aware of that.
Right. Mm-hmm. And it came into play a few years ago. It was Sato. Hit the wall and won in a place where nobody hits the wall. And he scraped along the wall and just chucked all kinds of parts.
Oh, God.
Not big parts. Just parts up into the wall, up in there. But it was little shavings and carbon fiber and tire and stuff like that. So there's where I got to jump into something that I don't ever do. I got to get out and get in the front row in what we call the DMZ, where I was telling you all the seats are taken out. And I got to get out there and make sure everybody in the first couple rows, is everybody okay? Has anybody got stuff in their eyes?
Yeah, anybody hit with anything?
We need a medic over here for anything like that?
Yeah.
So if I'm not watching the race, then I don't know what the hell's going on.
Yeah.
You don't even know to check for that.
And that guy's had seniority 10, 15, 20 years over me that said, I don't need this crap. This is a part-time job.
Yeah.
I don't need to be threatened.
Well, I mean, we met Kentucky Joe at the air race. And he drives up from
Louisville. Yeah.
Well,
south of Louisville.
He's around Elizabethtown. He's BFE Kentucky and drives up to be a yellow shirt.
I met him in the campground.
Yeah.
He was camping with some guys that were camped right beside him that I had met the previous year. And he latched on to us.
Yeah.
Hell, he didn't even know us, and we took him downtown ever since.
He's a good guy. But it's like there's so many yellow shirts that drive.
But going back to the stories, that's the funniest ones is the people partying. And it was just a party.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, race day, nobody gets stupid drunk in East End.
No.
You spent good money for that seat. And I'm talking even back in the 80s, that seat was like 40 bucks.
Yeah.
But your GA was what? $7?
Exactly. Yeah.
$5 or $7. $10.
Yeah.
At the most.
It's
so
fine.
People don't get drunk and watch the Indianapolis 500 in my stand.
No. I mean, there are stands that happens, and it's funny because we sit, our seats are in the paddock.
Yeah.
And it took a lot of years to get there.
Right.
The first day we had our own seats, the stands aren't even there anymore. It was like Little League soccer stands in turn one.
Mm-hmm.
And it was, I think...
You're talking about...
Like the 98 race.
You're talking about the little bitty area that's got the... is that what we're talking about? On the inside?
On the inside of turn one.
Yeah.
Where now there's that little cutaway and... Yeah, where the pit car, where the pace car hangs out. Yeah.
Okay.
That
little bitty right there by the scoreboard.
Yes.
What do they call that? I'd have to have a map, but people will still buy those seats, and people will come up, and they're like, where's this at? And I'm like, oh, my God, why did you buy that?
Right? Because they're awful. You can't see anything. But it was, you know, we, because the year before we had gotten Southwest Vista, and it was through somebody from my mom's hometown in Frankfort, Indiana.
Yeah.
And it was their parents had these seats, and they bought a block of seats in Southwest Vista. And so anybody, you know, and so her parents had gotten seats there. And so that's who we got them through. And then at some point he was like, I'm not buying seats for all of my parents' friends. Like, my parents are dead.
Yeah.
Like, if you don't know me, I'm not buying your seats anymore.
Right.
And so we decided, you know, and so we had gone that year, and then we were like, we should start getting our own seats. And so the first year, it was bottom of the barrel, but there were still great attendance. And so we didn't have access to decent seats.
Right.
And we saw literally this much of the track.
Yeah.
I mean, we're on the inside of turn one. Like, we saw that. We saw the inside of turn one and nothing else.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And
some kind of terrace is what those are called. It makes it sound like it's a
fancy
seat.
It is not.
It's not. No.
It is not.
No.
Well, I say those seats aren't even there anymore.
Yeah, they are. That little bitty.
No. The ones where we were.
Okay.
They're not there.
This is why we're by the motorcycle park.
That little bitty
thing is still there.
That one is still there.
Yeah.
I know what
that
you're talking
is,
about,
yeah.
But it's
now,
similar to that one.
It's like the exact opposite of South Vista.
It's right across from it.
Yeah.
And it's this little bitty, like kid high school.
Yes.
Football game.
Yeah.
Bleachers and little bitty things. Now, the first year I started working in 82, all my friends had been telling me stories of what was going on across the track. Okay. Over in the original.
The OG snake pit.
The snake pit. The original snake pit. My friends were all, man, you're going to love this. Because if the race is boring, we watch what the hell's going on over there. And I show up and I'm going, they build bleachers.
You're like, what the hell?
There's bleachers all the way through turn one on the inside now. And I'm like, we can't see anything. But I'm telling you what, there still wasn't, whatever the hell was going on was pretty awesome, uh-huh. Because the whole top row, I don't think they watched any of the race. They were all standing over there looking what was going on behind them.
Apocalypse, that's what it was on in the snake pit back then.
Yeah, I mean, that was freaking hilarious to see that. And go back in history where those guys over there on race day are standing over there in their shirts off,
mm-hmm.
baking, and we're over here in Grandstand E, colder than a mother.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, we got a jacket on because of the grandstand, concrete, and it was,
and you get the wind.
The wind goes up.
A little bit of wind coming up, and it was cold.
It's like a whole different climate.
Definitely. Definitely.
So what's your favorite memory of?
Well, like I said, the first year I worked,
mm-hmm.
I got to go down at the end of the race, and I am standing where Gordon Johncock is coming down in the pace car, and I'm standing there because we, at that time, when we still opened the gates up so you can walk across the track. And mm-hmm. at that time, you were supposed to
continue. Did they still do that?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
It's open pre-race and post-race both.
Okay. I thought they still did that
for
500 only. Yeah.
Right. And now they encourage you to go out there and come and just hang, mm-hmm. loiter, whatever you want
to
call it.
They did
and
not used to encourage
No, no,
that.
Keep
no.
going.
No.
We actually went out there with a rope and split off the crowd. One way, so people didn't try to mingle, and you had guys saying, come on, keep it going, keep it going, keep it going. Well, I'm at the end of the rope, okay? And here comes the pace car with Gordon Johncock in it. And I'm like, the car goes by me, and I'm like, boom, 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 the Camaro, that 82 Camaro.
Mm-hmm.
Was like, and I'm like, oh, my freaking God. I just got that. And I ran my hand down as it drove past me. And I'm like, I'm 22 years old.
Right.
Right, yeah. You're like,
right.
I have to touch
it. I have to touch the pace car. To be fair, we would all still do that today, though.
Oh, definitely.
Oh, yeah.
Got to touch it.
Definitely. I got to touch it as it drives by me. And I'm going, that's what I just said earlier. I'm like, this is something that I will do
mm-hmm.
until I can't do it anymore.
Absolutely.
I mean, that was great to watch the last 10 laps of that race.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm standing down where we take that ANCO barrier off
mm-hmm.
so they can go across that track. That was my vantage point for the last 10 laps of the race. Standing like this far is what it looked like, is what it felt like, you know, 2 feet from the wall. And all I'm seeing is hearing the cars coming, and I see two helmets.
I mean, the
cars were so low, all you saw was the helmet above the car.
Yeah.
And then when they go into one,
the only way you could have been like closer is if you had been driving.
Oh, hell yeah. It was so freaking cool. I mean, I still get cold chills from thinking about that.
Yeah.
I mean, that was so cool for the first year that I got to do that.
Wow.
That's cool.
I mean, then you go,
I mean, there's other races that are cool.
That I've seen, like the 92 500 was so freaking cold.
Mm-hmm.
And if you go back and look at history, I mean, every time they threw the green flag, somebody's into the wall because the tires were cold.
Yeah,
the speedway sold out of everything that would resemble a jacket. They people were buying socks.
Yeah,
they were for gloves.
Yeah,
hats.
We tried that for the air race this year.
It was definitely cold. Yeah, but I mean, it was. No, there's no coffee to be bought, no hot chocolate to be bought.
Anything hot,
but
anything
I'm telling you,
warm.
That was still hell of a damn good race.
Well, yeah.
I mean, that 90. Listen to me, I'm telling you, I've seen so. I can watch in May of every year, they always on ESPN Classic 500s, whole weekend pre the 500, they'll have it's a 1 hour or 2 hour.
And it's all the best clips of.
It's the race from that year. Sometimes they'll show some from older stuff. They'll show some qualification highlights and stuff like that. But I can watch like the first 5 minutes of that race and go, oh, I remember that day.
Mm-hmm.
I can tell you who won.
Wow. That's amazing.
I mean, it comes back that you can remember that
stuff.
Just like I was telling you before I even knew you two about the story about Mario Andretti hitting a squirrel during the race.
Yeah.
That squirrel was running along the fence, on the catch fence.
Yeah.
Back and forth, back and forth. You know, we're in his one day a year. This is a huge crowd.
Right.
Right. There was no Brickyard at that time.
Yeah.
It was the month of May and that was it. So for 30 days, there was all these people hanging out on the track. And this squirrel was just nuts with 250,000 plus people.
Because the rest of the year, that's where he lives.
Right. That's his.
And he's like, what in the fuck is happening?
He's running back and forth on the catch fence. And also,
he's trying to tell everybody to get the hell out of his home.
He's out there running on the track.
Oh, God.
And the crowd is doing just what you just did. Oh, my God. Oh. You just hear the crowd going oohing and aahing because the squirrel's like standing out there. And he's like, what do I do? You know, and then Mario freaking hits the squirrel. Wow. Leave it up to Mario Andretti.
To hit a damn squirrel.
It would be Mario.
And then, you know, a few laps later, it's like Mario is slowing down. That's what's coming across Tom Carnegie saying it on the PA.
The squirrel. Because of the squirrel.
I don't think the squirrel is what put him out. No. But I mean, it was just.
Let's be real.
He hit the squirrel, and it's funny because when they threw caution. They had to throw a costume.
Well, they had to.
Right, and here comes the safety guy, and he picks it up out there. You know, he picks it up.
Now, was it flat? Was it
totally? Oh, no. It was still, you know.
Twitching?
Oh, come on. You get hit with 220 miles an hour.
It ain't twitching.
I don't think you're going to be twitching, but he's picking it up by the tail.
Oh.
Yeah, and the crowd's like, ooh. I mean, you got, I don't know how many people in my stand, 30,000. In the whole East.
Yeah,
area.
Yeah.
It is 40,000, whatever. 20,000, whatever it is.
Sure.
And everybody's in this area.
Everybody's all in the same moment. Yeah.
Because everybody's watching this.
Yeah.
God, it was.
Isn't that the beauty of going to a race, though, is that when something happens in front of you,
everybody sees it, you're all
family immediately.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That's one of my favorite things about, and that's what I loved about when we went to Mid-Ohio, is that we immediately just felt like we were just welcomed in as, like, family. It was like, come on in.
You should have came back that evening. Did you go to the concert?
No.
Okay, so they had a concert. It didn't start when it was supposed to, but we went to it, and, oh, boy. Doug passed out. Okay. As Doug well does.
Not surprised. Okay, he drove us.
After 9 o'clock, he's usually down.
I will say, prior to that concert, he was driving the golf cart.
Maybe I shouldn't say he passed out. Maybe say he... Doug's a 9 o'clock at night person.
Sure. However you want to say it, but I'll tell you this. We've been in the golf cart for 7.5 seconds before I was like, Doug, maybe I should drive.
Oh, yeah.
We had been in the car 5 seconds and I'm already praying.
Right.
Yeah. And so I've got a leg like blocked.
Oh yeah.
And I do one of these and I grab him. And so we are, this is about halfway through the golf course. I grab him. I said, if I go out, you go out. He goes, I don't know if that's a good decision. I'm the driver. And I go, I think that you need to adjust your choices accordingly, because if I come out, you're coming out.
He rolled a golf cart at Mid-Ohio. Did he tell you about that?
This year?
No, a couple years ago. Well, it was last year.
I don't know. I don't know how he didn't roll.
He rolled it and came sliding up to the campsite and cut it sideways in that gravel.
Oh, yeah.
And it rolled over.
I mean,
was it Doug did it or Gabe or Ted? I can't. One of them did it and it ended up under the golf cart.
He broke a rib.
I think it was Ted.
Oh, Jesus.
I think it was Ted that was talking about a broken rib. Doug had a broken rib? One of them ended up under the golf cart.
He hit those brakes when he saw Scott. I thought, this is how I'm dying. Just the car
exploded. Gotta love him.
But that's what I just love that. And you know, and I don't feel like it's like that in all the stands. Like Stand E, Southwest Vista. I feel like all of the Turn 1 stands.
As I'm standing there every morning, these newer badges have my name, first name, bigger, and people walk up every year and go, "Hi, Brian." Okay, I've seen you, but I don't know you.
You're like, I don't know who you are.
I don't know you. But then you know who I am.
Yeah.
And people walk up every year and they go, "Back again, right?" And I'm going, "You're here too, right?"
Yeah. We made it.
But it is, I mean, it is pretty fun though. Cause I mean, even in, which I will say, one of the things that I was disappointed in with our seats in Paddock, which I love our seats. We are actively trying to move to Standee, obviously.
Right.
But, one of the things is that in a lot of other seats, there are these people who have been there, like you've talked about, for decades and decades and decades. And we haven't had that experience in our seats in the Paddock. The people around us every year are different.
Right.
I don't know if it's that it's some scalper has those seats and they're selling them. I don't know what the deal
Paddock
is.
Paddock seats used to be...
It used to be kind of that legacy kind of feel, but it's not anymore.
It's not anymore because I'm talking back when your pit stops were 20 seconds.
Mm-hmm.
And now you're down to 7 to 10 seconds. A 12-second pit stop is too... You've lost a lot of time in the pits.
A 14-second pit stop, somebody's getting fired.
You don't see as much in the pits as you used to. And the same way, if you'll watch races and you'll see those pit seats, they're not full anymore.
No.
That's a hard seat to sell because you don't see very much.
No.
And before they actually put the screens in, those seats sold. But again, I'm talking about when we had a 12 second pit stop was fast.
Yeah.
Yeah, but because it is real. Go back and watch some of these races, and you'll see where, like, they jack up the car in the funniest way they jack up a car. I mean, there's no air jacks that come underneath the car. And then all these guys are just walking around going, hitting the tires. They're not even changing the tires.
Just hitting them.
They're just putting fuel in it.
Yeah.
The driver gets out, has a cup of coffee, smokes a cigarette, you know, shit like that.
I'm exaggerating.
But
back and watch some of the old races, the drivers were getting out.
Yeah.
Because it took a long time to fuel up the car. But see, those seats are hard to sell, and like the Paddock is a hard sell now too because of that. That's why they put that extra row up there so you can maybe get a little higher and get more of a vantage, point.
True.
But there's one lady that shows up in, let's see, she's like in box 12 every year, and she's ancient, and she has T-shirts every year, and everybody in her group that says Mavis's.
However many.
I've seen her
65th. Yeah, 500.
I've seen, I've seen Mavis. I've seen Mavis.
Yeah,
in her
I don't
crew.
Think her name's Mavis, but Marilyn. Yeah. Marilyn. That's her.
Yes. Yeah.
Marilyn.
Yeah.
No. And it's like. She's going up the stairs, and I stop the traffic, and I'm like, "We got to let her go."
Yeah,
because she's and her family's like almost wheelchair.
Yeah,
I mean she's they're wheelchairing her to the stand.
Yeah, and then she makes the hike.
She's walking.
And she gets up, and that woman never leaves. She's up there for the entire race. The whole family around her is wearing those shirts. Like,
that's fantastic.
I don't. It might have been 60 some years that she's been there, but every year she's back, and that's whole group's with her.
That's amazing.
Now, it used to be like that for the entire stand.
It did.
And that was, you know, this was my 30th year, and I'm like, some of my fifth, you know, shit like that.
Yeah.
You know, but that group has died. And again, like I said, we have lost this generation that, yeah, my kids still come.
Generation X. That's the generation
my kids
lost.
Still come. My son's going to be 28 this year. He still comes, but guess what day he comes for?
Carb day.
Carb day.
Yeah.
Well, and that's where, it. Yeah, so your son, so we're 33, so we're in, like, the same generation, technically, that he is. And it's, yeah. like, my older siblings, you know, they're late 40s and early 50s. And it's, like, the Generation X crew, they're intermittent. And I feel like it's, you know, they either grew up with it or they didn't, but nobody's really marketing towards them at this point. But our generation, this, like... You know, below, we're not Generation X, but we're not necessarily millennials. Right. We're in this in-between kind of place.
Very weird.
I feel
See, I'm
like...
I'm classified as a baby boomer.
And what year were you born?
60.
Which is...
right at the edge of that.
Right at the end of it. Yeah.
But...
Because my older sister was born in 66.
Yeah.
So, you know, and she's technically a Generation Xer, but... Is she really Generation Xer? Like, not
right.
really.
Yeah.
But it's like our age group, I appreciate that they have been trying to draw them in with Carb Day and things like that. And I hope that that does pan out and that it spreads to other things. But
what gets me is these young kids that come in now, and I shouldn't say young kids, but to use that genre, and they'll come in the main gate, which is, you know, the new main gate.
Right.
And they'll walk right up to us and they'll go, where is... The where's the party at? Where's the DJ? And for the pit party, not the pit party, but
snake
the
pit,
snake
yeah.
pit party, yeah. And we're like, you got to do this, and
you got to go all the way around, then you got to go under the tunnel, and then you got to turn again.
And then you'll go, and then you'll see it way over there, and they're like, wow, this is a pretty big track. Yeah,
like hey, yeah, no,
yeah,
shit.
But they're there just for the snake pit.
Yeah,
which, they're not there to watch the 500.
You've got Mary Pat and Joe here.
Yeah, neighbors?
No, it's
family.
My godmother and her son, one of my good friends.
Oh, okay.
He's up
okay.
in Florida. So
okay.
But it's interesting. I will say with RCs, even though we don't have like that generational thing, that like there is still that friendliness.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You know, because we make friends with everybody around us every year, even
right.
though I would love if it was the same people.
Yeah. Right.
But it's not. And
no.
so I grew up, you know, when we went in Southwest Vista, it was the same people every year. And
right.
I would say there was one guy that was in the very
right.
front row of Southwest Vista, and he'd been there. I mean, he's probably dead by now. That's how old he was when
right.
I saw him. And when they would play Stars and Stripes Forever,
yeah.
the good old John Philip Sousa, da-na-na-na-na-na-na-na, he would, tracks this way, he would turn around, face the stands, like he was
and he would
direct the entire thing. Dun,
right.
dun, 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 dun,
right.
dun. And he would cue every section and do this whole production. And like that was part of the allure of that section is
right.
that everybody knew this guy was going to stand up and direct Stars and Stripes Forever
right.
every year. And
mm-hmm.
And so, you know, I expected that no matter where we went. But it has changed some.
Yes.
So we're
even the pre-race has changed. The bands come. But it's not the same because people used to flock in for the parade of bands.
Yeah.
yeah.
So it started at 8 a.m.
Yes.
The stands would be half full.
Yeah.
Because people wanted to see these bands.
And
now these bands, they don't, I mean,
they don't play for anybody.
I don't even know if they even walk around the entire oval anymore.
No, they still do,
but
it's.
They don't play.
Probably.
I mean, by the time they're.
I mean, the only reason they walk around the whole oval is that it'd be too much of a CF to have them stop anywhere else.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
It's not because it's the best thing. It's just because it'd be a cluster.
I mean,
a
lot of the bands anymore, when they used to play when they're walking past
and
the
stand. And they just march.
And now they're just, the drummers are the only thing.
Yeah,
and
in that case.
That's it. There's no music coming out of it.
I mean, which I will say, having been a marching band, it's a motherfucker to march on that track
sure.
and play at the same time.
Oh, I don't doubt that one.
It is a motherfucker.
I mean, it doesn't look like it's bent.
Until you get out there and walk on it.
I remember my first mini marathon. I was
right.
like, this would be great. I hit that and I went, oh, God.
Well, yeah, they don't even let you get out on the track.
No.
Because
I mean,
now you're in the pit lane.
It used to be you
yeah.
could get up a little
right.
bit. But
now you're
like,
in the pit
oh,
lane.
God, this was a bad idea.
This is 9 degrees. Wait till you go to Daytona.
yeah, I know.
I mean, when we go pre-race... When they bring out the cars, it's like the 500.
Oh.
Because it's the first race of the year, and they bring out a marching band.
Oh, cool. Oh, I'm
and
so
the,
excited.
And the car, yeah, you'll get kind of goosebumps, because it's cool, because here comes the American flag, and then they'll bring out all the flags from all these different countries.
Oh, yeah.
Because every driver has, if they're from a different country, mm-hmm. they bring a flag out for each
one. Sure.
And so they're out here marching
yeah.
in front of the cars as the cars are being pushed out on the grid. And we're down there in that. And then you can hang out in the grass.
Oh, okay.
And in the grassy area.
Yeah.
And that's pretty cool. And then we always go up into the stands to watch the first half hour, 45 minutes or whatever. It's kind of a tradition that we started. Go up as high as we can.
Yeah.
Get a different perspective,
you have to,
right?
Yeah.
And to walk up that track, it's
hardcore.
Yeah.
Okay.
Pretty crazy. The Daytona event is fun. Okay.
I cannot wait.
I'm pretty sure you'll have a good time.
Oh, I think that's gonna be
on Friday night. It's a party,
awesome.
And the one group that we end up partying with, they're called East Coast. Sports car group or something.
Oh, okay,
like that. And they're from all over the East Coast. But we end up partying with them. They have a game called Battle Shots.
Mm. Oh, I'm familiar with Battle Shots.
Right. Just like Battleship.
But with
except
shots.
Except with shots.
Oh, God.
Yeah. And you miss. You got to take take a shot, stuff like that.
Oh, God.
We've been playing that for. That's the guy that I met with, had the shirt when I had the
shirt
on.
Yeah.
The camera guy.
Yeah.
And we started partying with them 2 years ago.
And then they've got the battle shots.
Oh, yeah. We got some people real. I mean, we ended up running out of alcohol, and people are going back to their campsite getting more alcohol. And I'm running around this year with a megaphone. Somebody had a megaphone, and I borrowed it for like 2 hours.
Oh, yeah.
Trying to get new contestants to play Battle Shots. Battle Shots! Battle Shots! Come play Battle Shots!
Let me just add megaphone to our running
list. There you go. You know what? We went
need.
To Bed Bath & Beyond last night.
Yeah.
$10.
Oh, and you got them coupons.
For a big megaphone.
Okay.
Oh, okay.
I mean, a good size one, about...
A good, yeah.
Yeah, a foot long, and it was like, wow. A megaphone, And then on a Saturday night, it's during the... We always go right before the fireworks shoot off at 10 o'clock. Go over to the International Horseshoe.
Okay.
And that's where they do that 180.
Oh,
right,
yeah,
the
yeah.
slow way down, and then the fire... And then they're doing... You see the brake rotors glowing red when they could brake real hard right there. And then the fireworks are right behind it.
That's amazing.
I put that on Twitter the other day.
Yeah.
Every year we go to that spot.
Yeah.
And it's asshole to elbow crowded.
Oh, I'm sure.
100%.
Yeah. So the best way to do it, if you got the access to it, bring a small stepladder.
Oh, I do. Because
that's what
we got letters. We got letters for days.
That's what my buddy Joe does. It's the photographer dude.
Oh, that's
he has a step ladder. He puts a little step ladder up and he gets up.
Let's say I'm short, so I have to have something in my house.
There you go.
Ta-da!
I've got like a two-step ladder. Yep. You can bring something like that. So
that's awesome.
But I mean, that's what I get psyched for this.
Yeah.
And now May is kind of not that I'm going to ever give up on the 500, but because I always look forward to the month of May.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, now I got this to look forward to.
Yeah.
Well, and you don't have to work this. And so it's a different...
Right.
Mm-hmm. It's a different love.
Right.
Yeah.
It's a different love. It's not that you're not excited for the 500, but...
Oh, no. Oh,
but this is purely a play weekend for you.
Definitely.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, all right.
Well,
favorite driver.
Yeah.
Everybody.
Least favorite driver.
Past?
Anytime.
Mario Andretti.
That's... Yeah.
Because I always thought... And Michael.
You and my dad.
And now... Marco.
Yeah.
Now, when we went to Pocono this year, they had the podcast for the mayors on air.
Yeah, Hinch.
Okay, the Hinch thing. And they had it at the Payne Tour facility.
Yeah.
They do that every year. And those guys, by the way, are pretty cool. I don't know if you follow the Payne Tour.
We're following them there. We're talking.
Okay, on Twitter. Those guys are really fun.
Awesome.
They came up this year at Pocono and said, "You're Indy 500 Pirate." I said, "You think?"
Yes, I am.
And they were like, "Yeah, we've seen these flags before at the Speedway."
Yeah.
On Twitter and stuff. I'm like, "Okay." So they were like, "Come over here tonight because we're having the mayor on air."
Yeah.
And they had Marco
at
the mayor on air with Hinchcliffe and who was the other one? There was three of them.
Probably. Oh.
It wasn't Newgarden.
Rossi.
Will. Wasn't it Will?
Will Power. You're right.
It was Will.
And Power. Power can be funny.
He can be funny.
But obviously, Hinchcliffe is hilarious.
Oh, yeah.
But
he's a character.
Marco, they were trying to get him to... We were talking... Okay, that is real... Pocono is near Nazareth.
Yeah.
So people at camp beside of us were from that Nazareth area.
Like, they're his
neighbors.
And
they knew him.
Yeah.
And they said, the biggest thing with him is he has no self-confidence, is what they said.
Shocker.
I'm actually not surprised by that.
Now, if he'd have won, I've read stories about this. Now, if he'd have won the first 500 that he was in when he got passed by Hornish at the end,
yeah,
I think I'm going to change
how much his career would be different.
Oh, it'd be much different.
Because now you're an Indy 500 winner as a rookie, just like Rossi.
Yeah, exactly.
Right.
I mean, the difference between first and second place in the Indy 500. I mean, it's a career change.
Right. Right. But I don't want to dislike Marco, but he's an Andretti. And
it's
I want to see that curse never broken.
Yeah. Yeah, it's just real easy to hate him.
Really easy.
Yeah.
I
mean, and he doesn't make it any harder to hate him.
I mean, I so many years I'm standing in East Ham watching this race, and it's Michael and Mario.
Mm-hmm.
They're 1-2, 1-2. They've got the class act. Back when they had those Kmart cars,
yep.
You know, their white car, number one and number two.
Yep.
And they're just class act. They're leading the field,
but they can't pull it off.
They can't close.
And I'm like,
they can't.
Okay, guys, you've lapped the field. There's this thing called let off that accelerator a little bit. Maybe your car might make it. But those guys were so balls to the wall.
Yeah.
That's all they knew. Mm-hmm. And then I read one year where Mario is leading going in lap 190. And I remember this. And like a little bit, his turbo quit, I think, at what it was. And if he would have jumped down to fourth gear, because he think it was. And for cruising, and if he would have
just bumped it back.
Pulled it back,
he'd have been fine.
The motor would have lasted. But so within that 10 lap period, he's done.
Well, and to me, I'll just say that to me says that you're just not that familiar with machines. Because so my dad was a mechanic to like put himself through college and all that business. And so like I grew up working on cars and all that business. And we always take a houseboat trip every year. And so like I learned how to drive a boat from him. And his thing was, you know, whenever you drive a boat, like throttle, it's, you know, same as gas pedal. You know, he's like, okay, run your engine at 80%. Don't run your engine at 100%.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Same as you don't run your furnace. You don't put it to 95 degrees and leave it on for 5 minutes and then turn it off. You run it at a lesser percentage because that maximizes the life of it.
Right. Mm-hmm. But I saw the Andretti's lead so many laps.
Yeah.
And they couldn't pull it off. And now I'm like, I don't ever want to see an Andretti ever win. I didn't even when Michael was driving still. And when he came back and drove a few years again, I was like, oh, hell no. I do not want to see him win this race. And then Marco, there's like lap 199 and Marco's leading. And it goes past me and I'm like, oh my, and the crowd's cheering. The crowd is really cheering.
Yeah, and you're like,
and I'm like, oh my God, that curse is going to be lifted, and it's going to be this spoiled little shit who's going to win this race. And then Hornish just comes out of a shotgun and passes.
Says, not today, Junior.
Oh, yeah. Where he came up with that extra horsepower. Yeah. But
the curse.
I never liked Michael for the fact is I always I put him same time frame as Al Jr.
Mm-hmm.
Right? To me, the Unsers were hardworking people.
Yeah.
Okay? Because even though Mario drove sprint cars and stock cars and at the 24 hours of Le Mans and stuff like that, I don't know. There was always something about him I didn't like. So I didn't like Michael. And you look at Al Jr.'s wife, and she's got a fire suit on. To me, that's a working man.
Yeah.
I don't really have a favorite driver because they're all doing something that I would fucking love to do.
Sure,
I get that.
So I can't say I really dislike Marco. I can't say I really love Hinchcliffe, but I do. He's fucking hilarious.
Oh, he's so funny.
You've met him.
Yes.
Yeah.
I mean, he come out of his motorhome this year at Mid-Ohio. Because we had Chucky with us, the handicapped man, guy, and come out in his socks.
Oh my God!
And to talk to us.
He's a great ambassador.
And I saw him.
He's very much for the people.
Him at Daytona.
Yeah.
In the pre-race, in the pit lane, in the garage area, and I walk. He walks by me. Nice shirt. Because I got the fucking Indianapolis shirt on.
And he's like,
nice shirt, dude. So when I saw him at Mid-Ohio, I'm like, hey, you're probably not going to remember. He goes, no, I remember the shirt. Because I had that shirt on at Mid-Ohio, too. Fuck you, we're from Indianapolis.
Yeah.
I got to kind of watch where I wear it, because some crowds might not appreciate it. At Daytona now, it's everybody knows, oh, there's the guys from Indianapolis.
Yeah.
Yeah. We might have to get our shirts a little sooner.
You might want to think about. We're from Indiana, because I've got some new T-shirts. I was thinking about getting something printed on them. It has like the Indiana flag on it. It was like, yeah, we're badasses. We're from Indiana or something. Yeah, like that.
I mean, I'm all about that.
Yeah, but you might want to think about getting something printed up for race day. Okay. So you'll
We definitely should.
Yeah,
so we'll be ready to go.
Yeah, we gotta dress with our crew.
Right, and the problem is then make sure you get it big, because you might have to have a shirt underneath it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's what I have to do every year, is like tank top like this. Yeah, is layer it. Yeah.
So, all right. Well, thank you so much for talking to us.
This has been fantastic.